Welcome to Remotely Possible, a podcast about the people shaping the future of work. My name's Adam Riggs, and I'm the CEO of Frameable, a software company that's improving distributed work for Microsoft Teams and Outlook users. We're always looking for leaders, technology innovators, and software partners who might be a good fit as a guest on the podcast. If you have a story to share about creating and maintaining a highly collaborative environment for either hybrid or fully remote teams, we'll share details at the end of each episode of this podcast so you'll know how to get in touch with us. And now, let's dive into our conversation about how real people are making the future of work more successful. Welcome to today's episode. Today, my guest is Lindsay Claiborne. She's director of HR at CarData, a Canadian software company, where she's responsible for the strategy and execution of all their HR operations. The company makes accounting and logistics software for managing auto and truck fleets for their customers who have a meaningful percentage of their own employees on the road, visiting clients and vendors, and who need help with vehicle management. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So why don't you start off by introducing yourself and CarData to the listeners?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, I am the director of HR at CarData, and we are an organization that builds and deploys programs and software to support those programs that enables companies with employees who are on the road for work to accurately and fairly reimburse those employees for using their personal vehicle for work as opposed to a company car. So we essentially offer an alternative to traditional fleet management software and services.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So tell us about the difference between what your company looked like in 2019 and what it looks like today.
I really see throughout that time us transitioning from really one chapter to another. So in 2019, prior to the pandemic, we were an organization that was just hitting its 20-year mark, that we were family-owned and operated, very small shop, sub 20 people, working in the office every day. And then obviously the pandemic hit and everything changed. And then fast forward a year later to 2021, and we went through another big change with having an incredible new set of leadership come in and really set the organization on a different path of growth, which we have experienced over the last 3 years, growing from that sub 20 in office every day to now an organization of 70, around 75, who are not only concentrated in Toronto, but also have employees in other parts of Canada, as well as in the U.S.
Fantastic. So, you know, it's great to have you here today, specifically because you have been heavily involved in the recruiting and the training and the onboarding of, sounds like, roughly 50 people that you've added in the last several years. So we would love to hear a little bit about your approach to recruiting and onboarding of hybrid positions and fully remote positions, and just your general approach to creating teams out of this very diverse set of logistics, as opposed to 5 years ago when probably most people were spending most days physically co-located.
Yeah, the world definitely shifted the way that companies recruit, how they recruit, as well as who they recruit.
Yeah.
And where. Most importantly, where they recruit.
Everything, right? Everything about the process is different now.
It is. And so there's a lot of factors that always go into recruitment. But when you're thinking about logistics in terms of where is that person located, organizations had to make a choice and are still having to make a choice of what is the best way to set up our organization. And definitely when we went through the shift in leadership in 2021 and really put ourselves on this path of growth, we had to look at all of the factors that influence recruiting and ultimately came to the decision that a talent first approach, meaning that we are going to look for the best talent regardless of where they're located. It's an added bonus if they are in some close proximity to where our office is, but ultimately recognizing that people, the best talent moved away from big metropolitan areas and went to areas where maybe the cost of living was more affordable. Maybe it just offered them a better lifestyle. Maybe they were closer to family. And so we needed to follow where those people went if we were going to get the best talent that was going to allow us to support our growth.
Absolutely. And what would you say is the most challenging part of that transformation? Other guests have talked a lot about the difficulty of creating the feeling of esprit de corps, you know, the feeling of being on a team and being connected to your colleagues when you're not physically together. So how do you tackle that? And how do you manage these? You mentioned that there are 10 or so people who come in to an office 2 days a week, and between 5 and 10 people who come in 1 day a week, and that the remaining 50 or so people are, for the most part, 5 days a week remote. So do the teams fall along those lines? Are there teams where they would have someone in each one of those pools? Or are there teams of people who are fully remote who very rarely, if ever, are in the same place together? Or how have you managed the diversity of circumstances there?
Mm-hmm. It's hard. And there's no one easy way. There is no playbook for this. It really takes not just the HR team, but the entire leadership team of an organization to take a step back and say, what is the type of culture we want to build? Because we cannot expect from ourselves that we are going to recreate the in-office vibe in a virtual remote world. That is an unrealistic expectation. So first of all, starting with what is the type of culture we want to create and foster? And then how do we build rituals and rhythms in both the remote world and the in-person world? Those rituals may look different, but they ultimately have the same goal of building and reinforcing the culture that we've decided we want to create and foster.
Yeah, for sure. What kind of software do you use internally just to manage your day-to-day communications with one another? And how do you supplement that with either cultural sort of expectations? Like, do you do trivia nights and things? So first, what is the software base of your communications? And then what do you layer on top of that base in order to help create the right conditions?
Yeah, you know, not unlike the people that we serve through our business, we've had to re-examine what are the requirements of the tech stack that are going to enable us as an organization from just a productivity perspective, but also a cultural perspective. So we look for the same things that we provide in the services and the software that we provide, which is we look for transparency. We look for a collaborative partner. We look for ease of integration with our other systems. We look for low touch systems that allow us to still manage the flow of work without having to require a lot of employee intervention. And so the number one thing that we looked at was our communication tool. You know, we switched from one tool to another that allowed us to still communicate first and foremost, but allowed us to layer on some of those cultural elements. So creating special interest channels that allowed people to congregate and have conversations in an asynchronous way. We looked at integrations with our other software that brought all of that into one place and allowed people to sort of have a one-stop shop. And they're going to have access to as many tools as possible just through that one portal. So anything that related to communication information sharing was what we focused on to enable, first and foremost, when we were primarily a remote first organization. And then as we've shifted and we've seen people wanting to come in and be in office, how do we, you know, those tools that can grow with us and can evolve with us, we've looked for that.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like maybe you made the shift from Zoom or Slack or Google or something like that into Microsoft Teams, but that's just a guess. Is that what happened or is it in the other direction?
The other direction. Yeah.
Okay.
What I love about Slack is it just has so many more integrations and seamless integrations with a lot of the other softwares that we use. And so it really allowed us to have that seamless experience for people when they're on their computer.
So does that mean you use Slack for video calls as well as text threads?
Primarily text threads, but it really serves a great purpose too when, you know, we don't have the luxury of just leaning over if you're not in office with the person you want to talk to and just tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, can I grab you for a sec without having to book a formal meeting. Slack has, you know, the call feature. You can just easily ping them if they don't answer. Okay, you hang up.
Yeah.
We've lost the art of calling.
Yeah, that's important. That's important. And what percentage of your interactions with distributed colleagues would you guess are camera on versus just voice or possibly voice over screen share?
That is a great question. I'd say it probably leaves 75 to 80% video on, 20 to 25% off. I've had to push, even myself personally, I've had to push myself to put my camera on more, but I've really seen the value, and I've seen the value for the other person as well, and just our relationships in general.
Yeah, so camera on is an important contributor, you're saying, to managing those physically remote but still important connections.
Absolutely.
Tell us, you are one of the people who primarily works remote. Is that correct?
I am one of the people that actually does a hybrid. So okay. I am usually in the office 1 to 2 days a week and then work from home the other.
Got it. So tell us how you have organized your own workspace in your not office location. How do you give yourself the best chance of being productive in your physical space? What kind of desk? What kind of screen? What kind of hardware do you use? Like, are you near a window or not near a window? Like, just paint a picture of what you have settled into that helps you get your work done when you're not around your colleagues.
Well, I would say the number one thing is having close proximity to the coffee maker. So it is in very close proximity. But for me, it's less about the tech. You know, I think organizations have stepped up and, you know, specifically at Cardata, our IT manager is phenomenal and makes sure that our people are set up. So it's less from a tech perspective, and it's more about the environment. So I like to have a lot of natural light. I like to have greenery and plants around me. And then most recently, I did invest in a much better chair because we are sitting a lot. But I have that complemented with my sit-stand desk, because having that option to just get up, even be able to get up and walk around a bit in the room, so having space around it, those are the things that I find are most important in my work from home space.
Yeah. And it's interesting. So since you're someone who does go into the office, have you seen over the last couple of years, either yourself or others in your position, have you seen them bring a different set of hopes or expectations about the office itself since they've been working at home, or they do work from home and they have probably more of an ability to design and make certain selections at home than at their home office than at the company office? Do you find yourself wanting a different layout or a different set of benefits or features, or is there anything like that from the office? Has the office space evolved?
The expectations and the desires, I would say, have absolutely changed. And we heard this before the pandemic. There was always a debate about, are open office spaces conducive or hinder great work? And, you know, we work in the technology space that has long been a fan of open spaces because it promotes that collaboration, that spontaneous interaction that leads to innovation, which I do believe personally. However, with people coming back, there's this transition period. And in that, we're seeing a desire for less open office spaces, more areas that are quiet, that either have noise dampening, noise canceling, or you don't have people watching and looking over your screen, even if they're not, you know, even if they're just walking past. I think that is a direct influence of we've been working from home and we have had that sort of solitude. And, you know, now we're going back to environments that were potentially controversial to begin with in terms of open office spaces and absolutely don't reflect what we have at home. But people still want the same things. You know, they still want a great environment. They want snacks. They want to be fueled up. And they want to have spaces where they can collaborate on whiteboards, in boardroom. And then the other thing that's a little less tangible is they want flexibility in terms of, when are they coming in? When can they leave? How do we make that work with commute times, especially in big metropolitan areas that have a lot of traffic?
Yeah, it's very interesting, the evolution of the expectation of privacy in the workplace. You know, before, I mean, there's a little bit of an aside or commentary for me, but I mean, I think that 2015 to 2019, let's say, you know, the most recent five-year period that was in the old chapter, we can call it, I think people had an idea about privacy in the workplace where they were going to work physically together every day, that's pretty different from what people want and expect now. And is also it was also interesting to see people, you know, did a great job of getting it done, so to speak, you know, during a difficult time. But having your work unfold in your physical space that's private, otherwise private, does challenge your idea about what is privacy, what is the right amount of privacy, what is the reasonable, fair amount of privacy, what does it mean to be interrupted by a colleague who needs your help, like how do we manage those interruptions, and what can we expect in terms of, you know, insulation from interruptions. It's very different when you're working at home than if you're in the physical office, right, where you're literally in a physical space that the company is paying for. Do you ever think about that, that idea of privacy and how it's changed?
Absolutely. And not just think about it in terms of how does it influence the culture, but also thinking about it from a legal perspective too. And what are now the expectations of employers who have, whether they have people in office or that they are supporting a remote workforce or a distributed workforce, what are your responsibilities, expectations that you have to meet as well as manage with your people and your employees when it comes to their digital privacy?
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more. It's just a very interesting evolution in a short amount of time. There's an economist at Stanford who publishes a lot on distributed work. His name is Nick Bloom, and he has made the point through survey work over the last 10 to 20 years, I think himself, but really the surveys and the data that's reliable goes back to the 50s, that we experienced something like 50 years of growth in distributed work in a 3-year period. Just because the pandemic, you know, and that the pandemic spike of working from non-office locations, it spiked up from single digit percentage points up into the high 60s, but now it's settling into the 25 to 30% range, and it's quite stable. So what that means is that, you know, 2023 was supposed to be the year of return to office, and that companies were going to have all the leverage, and that the medical emergency was over, and that they were going to say, okay, it's over, everyone come back to work. And really what we've seen is a very durable demand for this flexibility that you're talking about. It sounds like you are living that. If your breakdown is, you know, 20 people coming in 1 or 2 days a week and 50 people for the most part, 5 days a week from elsewhere, it sounds like you have really, you as a company, CarData, have really embraced this model as a way of attracting and retaining better talent.
Absolutely. And it's really about, there's a large conversation around productivity, you know, and I see it, you know, when you're in the office, when you, as we were just talking about, you have those interruptions. You have those, you know, side chats that maybe should have taken 5 minutes, but end up taking 15, and you get interrupted working on a project. It's not less productivity from my point of view. It's a different kind of productivity. When you're at home, you may be, whether it's in meetings or you're doing heads down work for 8 hours straight. You know, maybe you get up and go and walk your dog. You have that flexibility. Maybe you throw on a load of laundry. You have that flexibility to maybe get some of those life things done in between. But for the most part, you're productive straight between, you know, 9 to 5, 8 to 4, whatever your day looks like. When you're in the office, you may not be face at your computer for 8 hours straight, but you're still as productive just in different ways. You know, maybe you're not having a meeting, maybe you're not working on a project, but you're building relationships. You're sharing information. You're developing ideas. And those are the things that we really have lost in the times when we were 100% remote. So it really is about just shifting our mindset of what does it need to be productive, whether you're working in a distributed fashion or working in an office or some combination of the two, and what is the right balance for your organization and the culture you want to create.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because you earlier were talking about the tools you were using, that you're relying on, which is a familiar tech stack to a lot of smaller companies. For this question, it doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, Slack, Zoom, Google, et cetera, or it's the Microsoft suite, but it is a well-known additional challenge to have people who are not physically together really be able to tap into the creativity and the collaboration sort of benefits, right? That are easier to tap into when you're physically together. So given that your mix is 20 people, 1 or 2 days a week together, and 50 people for the most part distributed, what are some tricks or some hacks or some best practices that you use at your company that make it possible for people who are remote and are using these digital tools to overcome that challenge, to really be creative, to do creative work, and to do it together, not just alone? How do you help people touch those levels of professional productivity and, you know, achievement when they're not physically together?
I think my answer may surprise you, because no tool is going to fix an issue with your culture, and no prescription or process or workflow is going to fix an issue with your culture. It really does start with the culture. And so our focus, especially coming into 2024 and seeing that we're having more people coming into the office, and we really are seeing much more of a hybrid work environment and, you know, having to support office and distributed, we've had to rethink how we approach that culture. And from my perspective and the approach we've taken is it starts with relationships. And so the key thing that we have done, we've always done monthly town halls, and that's always been about bringing together our distributed workforce, our people that want to come in office or just come in, you know, once a month and see people in person. Been about that. It's been about information sharing. This year, we've added more elements that are focusing on how do we build relationships? You know, we're all taking this hour to come together. Let's spend some time getting to know one another. And so the last couple months, we have been tacking on just a short activity. One was just talking about getting to know you a little bit. Where did you grow up? How many siblings do you have? What's an interesting experience or memory from your childhood or teenage years? And just doing that in small groups. This past month, it was about, hey, can you bring a picture that has a meaning or an anecdote that you want to share? And these things don't take long. They're not heavy, but they build those relationships that then are really going to be what fuel the collaboration, regardless of what tool you use. The tool is important, but it's only as good as the people behind it. And to me, the people and the relationships are what's going to fuel that collaboration.
I understand. So just to repeat it back, you don't look to the tools, features, or functions to really help that you haven't found that they make nearly as big a difference as just taking the extra time, human to human, to connect and get to know each other so that you have that reservoir of knowledge that can turn into trust among colleagues, and that it's the trust among colleagues that is going to create the right conditions for creativity and the collaboration. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. Trust among colleagues, trust between employees and the company itself, trust, just filling up that trust battery and doing it through intentional rituals and practices.
Yeah, I love that. So we probably have time for one more question, Lindsay. What do you see in the future for companies that are resistant to embracing this demand for flexibility that you have embraced so successfully and that many of our listeners believe in? But what do you see as the road ahead for companies that are still having a hard time sort of accepting it, or the other side of that, which is what good or great benefits do you see coming to the companies that do embrace it?
Mm-hmm. The challenges are, we talked about recruitment has drastically changed. And so when the company's ethos approach isn't lining up with what are the demands of the market, it just creates harder time to recruit, potentially higher recruitment costs. There's opportunity costs with not having an individual in that seat because you're taking the time to find someone that's going to not necessarily value or care as much about the flexibility. And then so definitely tangible and intangible costs associated with that. And those are the primary ones. But the biggest one, the biggest benefit that organizations, and I guess this is a cost if you look at it the other way, but the biggest benefit is you definitely can tap into a much more diverse talent pool when you allow that flexibility, because life has just gotten more complicated. The demands of life have gotten more complicated on people. And so when we open up our ethos to embrace flexibility as a company, we're really benefiting from having a wider talent pool, a more diverse talent pool that are also going to share the same values with that employer and then are naturally going to be more inclined to do their best work and give their all to the company.
So do you see this as a set of trade-offs that are worth making from the company's perspective, or do you see this as a win-win-win for the customer, the employee, and the organization itself? Like, is it a set of trade-offs that you think the zeitgeist is just that these are the trade-offs that people should make, or do you think, no, it's not a set of trade-offs, actually, if you do it the right way, it's win all around?
There's definitely trade-offs. I say this to even when we're doing our onboarding and we're bringing people in, every relationship is give and take. You know, there's trade-offs in every single relationship in your life, personal and professional. And you just have to look at, is the net benefit to each person that's trading off greater than the things that you're trading off for? So to me, it's one and the same. There's wins all around, but it does require some give from each side.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Lindsay, it was great to have you today. We wish you good luck and Cardata good luck. And we look forward to catching up with you again in the future. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day.
I'm your host, Adam Riggs, and I'd like to thank you for listening to Remotely Possible, the podcast about distributed work and the people who make it possible. Remotely Possible is sponsored by Frameable, a software company with a mission of making virtual collaboration feel as easy as turning around and talking to each other. Learn more at Frameable.com. To become a guest on an upcoming edition of Remotely Possible, head over to Frameable.com/podcast and introduce yourself. If you know someone who'd be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, and include the hashtag Remotely Possible. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share it on your social networks and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and to our team. Want to know how Frameable Spaces helps Microsoft Teams and Outlook users collaborate more effectively? Visit our website, frameable.com, or follow us on social media. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.